What's up, everybody? Hobby with Cage, episode 69, Save the Dad Jokes. It's late. My son's already asleep. Otherwise, he'd be making a joke about this one. Fun little title. What can be learned from fantasy drafts? What can we take from the fantasy drafts that have been going on and utilize it in the hobby? Let's start off. I haven't done fantasy football in a very long time. Years it's been. I had a, you know, Luka Nation League last year, but, you know, I didn't really pay too much attention to it. I didn't want to win, you know. It's one of those things where, you know, it's your league, you can't really win it. So, you know, I did good enough to just, you know, be involved and not actually take the crown. But, you know, I had two fantasy drafts in the last two nights, and that's why this episode's coming to you a little bit late. I did a draft today live with Ian, you know, did a team. First things first, if you're in a fantasy league, thank your commissioner, because that's a thankless job. I mean, we almost had a big fight in today's draft where, you know, there were when can you trade until? When's a trade deadline? How do you veto a trade? Why is this rule like that? I mean, you name it. The commissioner, you know, booked a room for us, got some food and, you know, set it up and, you know, drove people there. I mean, it's a thankless thing. But then on the other end, you got some commissioners who are making trades that I think are, you know, a little unfair. Let's, you know, I'm in a hobby fantasy league, which I'm sure we'll do some content about. I'll tell you about my team. Different kind of league, man. Different kind of league. Two quarterbacks. 10 teams, two quarterbacks. Everybody has to start two quarterbacks. And then you got like three wide receivers plus two flex. But it was just a different league. And it was an auction. It was very weird. People spending their money, running out of money. Just pretty crazy. I'm sitting here after 2 days of different drafts, live and in person, standard, PPR, you name it. And there's a lot of correlations between, you know, fantasy drafts and the hobby. One, there's obviously many different ways of doing it. You can be a vintage collector. You could be a, you know, you could be a modern collector. You'd be ultra modern. There's no right, wrong way to do it. And I'm sure that, you know, everybody has their favorite. I was a fan of the auction draft. I think I probably should have done a little more research. And there is another little lesson to be learned there. You don't just dive in. You don't just jump in. Because, you know, I sat down in front of the computer not even realizing it was draft day. It's an auction. I've never done one before. I didn't even know how much money the team, you know, gets. And then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, you're paying $65 out of your 200 bankroll for Christian McCaffrey. And, you know, your quarterbacks end up being, you know, Brock Purdy and, you know, Sam Howell. It's sort of the same thing, right? Before you do anything in the hobby, you should be doing some research, you know, figure out what it is that, you know, you want to do, figure out what you want to do in the hobby. But the biggest thing I see from fantasy drafts, sports in general, it's just how things change, how tastes change, and how the shiny new toy is sometimes overvalued. And look, it's a little different fantasy. You know, Bijan Robinson may turn out to be the, you know, the greatest fantasy player on earth. But you don't know. He's still being drafted in the first half of the first round in a lot of drafts. And that's potential. And I thought about that after he was drafted early in both of the leagues that I was in. I said, you know, this is the hobby. People want to pay extra and put a premium on potential. They want to be the ones who, you know, call it out, want to be right and get there first and, you know, get there early. But if you're paying first round prices for that running back, is it really, you know, are you there early? Are you getting a bargain? Can there really only be downside there? You know, if you're drafting this rookie running back who has never even played in the NFL at the third, fourth, fifth position, like, isn't that the ceiling for him? I mean, even if he, you know, comes out and is a stud, is he going to have more points than, say, a Justin Jefferson or a Christian McCaffrey? Probably not. So I thought about that for a second. I said, you know, you draft somebody in the second, third round, and they have first-round production. Great. You know, you've got an extra value. It's sort of the same thing as – it doesn't have to be football. It's sort of the same thing as what we're seeing with a lot of these young players. Justin Herbert, great example, right? I mean, people paid so much money for his stuff. And it was almost like right out of the gate, you have an MVP priced in. You have a, you know, a championship or playoff run, you name it, priced in. And if it doesn't happen, you only have one place to go. It's down. If it does happen, it's already priced in. Like, you're already paying, you know, championship prices for this, for the cards. Luka, another great example. Trae Young, forget about it. You know, Zion, Ja, all these, you know, young players. The interesting thing about it is, if we're paying so much, we're paying a premium for these guys, look what winds up happening. You know, a lot of them don't pan out, right? Look what Wander Franco cards. I mean, obviously that's off the field, right? And even if they do, because so much money is being paid for these cards, even if they have, you know, great success, it just kind of puts the card at the value you've already paid for it. Anyway, it's just one of those things. I thought to myself, wow, this was, you know, it's interesting, right? Like, you know, it was one thing to be drafting Bijan Robinson in the second round, you know, a month ago, and hopefully he has first round production. But if you're paying $1 million for a Jason Dominguez card, you know, you're just getting back to that value because he's hit 3 home runs in his first 5 games now, which leads me to my next statement, my clippable content. Sell you damn Jason Dominguez cards. I love it. He's going to be a great Yankee. The kid is awesome. But wow, he's got some hype on him right now. I actually heard somebody at the fantasy draft today say that if he does this over the course of a season, he'll hit 100 home runs. They did the math. He said, all right, it's 3 home runs in 5 games, 162-game season. That's 32, 33 times 3, and that's 100 home runs. So next year, expect him to play 162 games and hit 100 home runs. Now, if he does that, his cards will probably go up in value, but I don't think that's how it actually works. You know, it's one of those guys, you know, he hits 2 home runs in opening day, and somebody says, that guy's on pace for 320 home runs. Again, not how it works. Sell your stuff. Sell now. Get whatever you can. It's just fun stuff, right? I mean, it's just one of those things you think about with the hobby. And I don't know when it really turned into that. I guess it's sort of, in some regard, always been that way, right? Everybody wants to get their rookie. Everybody wants to, you know, get in early. Everybody wants their guy. I did it, you know, in the 80s. I did it, I like Shaquille O'Neal in the early 90s. When his stuff came out, I collected a lot of Shaquille O'Neal cards. But more often than not, it doesn't pan out. It just doesn't, because, you know, there are only a handful of players in each decade, in each generation, that, you know, turn into those guys that are collectible over time. But if you think about it, right, I mean, you can go through the 80s, I can probably name you, you know, 10 or 20 guys. But if you go through, you know, through what people are investing in baseball and basketball now, there are 20 guys from the last 2 years. That's not going to remain that way. That's the fun stuff. That's the prospecting side. That's the, you know, just the kind of what's on the top of my brain from fantasy. The other stuff that I was thinking about today was, you know, Darren Revelle put the additional article out about, you know, the jersey, the Jordan jersey, the fraud, all that stuff that's going on there. And I'd love to hear from you guys. I wonder whether or not the news stuff, even my own, you know, weekly news, you know, I thought it was a cool idea, like very easy, clippable content. I wonder if it does us a disservice. You know, if you guys pause this episode for a second and go to Instagram, what you're going to see is probably every third post on your feed has a little breaking news scroll. Breaking news, breaking news. And if every breaking news story is about fraud, and the other two-thirds are about how you should have seen the fraud, and I saw the fraud, and haha, gotcha, the gotchas, and hey, your favorite influencers all suck, and 1 in 10 posts are about cards, you know, do we need to stop that cycle somehow? Do I need to, and here's where I'd love to hear your comments, do I need to stop doing hobby news? You know, do we need to stop putting that stuff out there? Because no one's putting stuff about cards. You know, I did my best this week. I got a bunch of DMs like, you know, how come you didn't cover the, you know, the card porn stuff more? How come it was the lead story? I mean, you go ahead and read Darren Revelle's post, which is what I said. But I really did try to focus on card sales. You know, the Wembanyama sale, the Topps, you know, Cosmic Chrome that came out. You know, the Bronny James that's coming out at the end of the in the week. And I think I'm going to have to do a little bit better in my own content. Maybe not just in the news, maybe in this. Maybe, you know, maybe it's got to be like a Cage's Corner. Cage's Card Corner, the Card Corner, whatever we will call it, where, you know, I'm doing 3-4 episodes a week. Maybe 5 minutes of that are going to be dedicated to cards. I mean, can you believe that I have to actually say that I'm going to have to dedicate a portion of my card content to cards. It's interesting, right? But maybe it's hey, these are what I bought this week, almost like mail day stuff. Hey, here's what I'm selling, and here's why. You know, here's what I listed, here's what sold for last week, here's my thought process as to why this is selling this week and why it's not. I think maybe that's probably helpful too. Maybe it balances the stuff out. You guys let me know what you think. I'm going to do that. Now, I'm also going to speak for a couple minutes to, you know, some folks that are out there who I've gotten DMs from in the past week since the story broke and since kind of the narrative in the hobby has kind of turned, you know, even more south. I've got a lot of DMs from people thinking about just leaving, thinking about just selling everything and leaving. And it reminds me of a lot of messages I got last year when the market, you know, kind of took a real downturn, from people who were, you know, who might have bought in at highs and, you know, were underwater. Same kind of like negative feeling, negative outlook on you know, the space. I would tell you, just like I said last year, if you're having those thoughts, you really should actually look into potentially maybe moving your money out. And here's why. I mean, the hobby for me is an escape. You know what I mean? It's I have, you know, a 9-to-5, which I wish ended at 5 and started at 9, but I have a 9-to-5, and that's work. That's stress. You know, I have a family, kids, you name it. That's stress. And I try to, you know, buy some cards, buy some silly cards, collect my Goonies stuff and, you know, my other, you know, nonsense, because it's an escape. It is an escape from the drama. It's an escape from the stress. It's an escape from the daily grind. And if the hobby, you know, if you're collecting, if your time in this space is actually causing you stress and you're looking to escape from that instead of it being where you are going to escape, maybe you need to step away. And I've told probably a half dozen people that this week. I know that doesn't go with the narrative of we're going to 10x the hobby, because it doesn't 10x the hobby to tell people to leave. But, you know, maybe stepping away is a good thing. And I will tell you, that is kind of the last little note that I have. I missed the hobby while I was on vacation. I'll say it again. I was away. I was in Disney World with the family. Didn't really have time to, you know, go through all of the posts and read the stuff. I buy cards. I won two auctions, believe it or not. I won an auction from Golden and I won an auction from SCP Auctions while I was away. I told you guys about the Golden one. That was the Wilt. I won an autograph from SCP also. But I missed the hobby. I was, you know, I answered the DMs, but I wasn't immersed in it. I wasn't, you know, I didn't buy too many cards. I got a bunch waiting for me on my LCS when I finally get there, probably on Friday, to pick up and buy. But I, one of the things I was looking forward to was, this is going to sound nuts, my morning commute to work today. because I have an hour train ride into the city where it's just, let's catch up on the hobby. Let's see what's going on out there. Let's check hobby Twitter. Let's check hobby IG. Let's check the instant messages, the direct messages. Let's respond. Let's see what's going on. And it's great because, you know, I don't have to think about anything else. I'm just thinking about the hobby. I really was looking forward to that. And I think part of it was because I had stepped away. I was away for a week and a half and wasn't really involved. I wasn't at a show. I wasn't doing any of that stuff. And, you know, it's like the absence makes the heart grow fonder, right? And maybe some of the folks who send me those messages, you know, maybe they're just, you know, every time they open up IG or every time they open up Twitter or wherever they get their stuff from, they're just hit with a constant barrage of negative stuff. And I'm not saying, oh, we got to prop up the positivity. We got to have the hobby optimism. No, no. Right now, the space is in an interesting place. It just is. We have, you know, the two manufacturers embroiled in lawsuits. We have players' associations, you know, taking away, you know, companies' ability to do stuff. We have fraud running rampant in all different aspects of the hobby. We have cards being cleaned. We have cards grading fours and fives in one place and the same cards becoming nine fives and tens in other places. It is, to say the least, it is an interesting time in the hobby. It wouldn't be the worst thing to, you know, turn off the screen for a minute and see whether or not you miss it the way that I missed it while I was on vacation, and maybe come back with a renewed focus on what it is that drew you back, what it was that you missed, what it was that you're enjoying about it. We talked about that in our last episode. I don't want to, you know, get too much into it, but I did get a lot of messages, more than I was expecting after the last episode, you know, where I asked, you know, are we still having fun with cards? And a lot of people answered that they weren't. And they, you know, that's a little sad because this it's a hobby. Right. And, you know, once it becomes more than that, once it becomes actually stressful for you, that's not a good thing. And that's not saying to the folks who sent me messages that there's anything wrong with, you coming to terms with the fact that it is stressing you out. People spend a lot of money, a lot of time. You know, some people have fell victim to scams. Some people just, you know, had really high hopes for the space. And have seen it turn into, you know, something different than what they thought it was. You know, for most of you, what I would say is I think a lot of the space is going to change still. It's changed significantly last year, but I think in the next year or two, it's going to continue to evolve and change. There will always be the, you know, the flippers and that kind of stuff. But I think as the hobby evolves and we get some more clarity on, you know, who's manufacturing what, what's being done and all that fun stuff, I think it the pendulum will swing back to, you know, collecting and really just enjoying the cards for what they are. And when it's not buying something today and selling it tomorrow for significantly more money or selling it in a week for more money, I think a lot of the folks who came in will just as quickly leave. A lot of them already have. And maybe that'll be when you come back in and enjoy it again. I don't know what the answer is on that front. I will tell you one suggestion I made to somebody who gave me their whole history. They told me, you know, they were a collector in the 80s and 90s, and you know, they came in, spent a lot of money, bought a lot of what they called the wrong things, and you know, had some bad grading experiences, and they've taken some losses on money, and you know, this, if it sounds like you, here's the suggestion I gave them. It's something I did at a recent show. I went to the, you know, the East Coast National. Go to a show, go to a store, go on eBay. And before you do that, make a list of the cards that you loved having as a kid but don't have anymore. You know, if you were the same age as me, you loved like 1992, 93 Fleer Ultra. When it came out, it was a cool Shaq product, right? With Alonzo Mourning, you had like the Rejectors and the all-rookie team. And, you know, Hoops had Magic's all-rookies. There were cool draft cards for Shaq. There were just, you know, cool cards. And I remember there were, you know, four or five that were too expensive for me as a kid. Chris Webber ones. I showed the head of the class card, which was numbered, that had the top six draft picks on the card, three on the front, three on the back. Go to shows and look for those cards. Don't look for them to grade, right? Put them in a binder, you know? And it doesn't have to be this huge, thick thing, you know? Make a couple-page binder. Buy 30 cards. Buy 40 cards. Put a set together that was a cool set that, you know, you built as a kid. I remember my favorite set to put together in basketball was the Skybox Draft Picks. And I don't know if I could still do it, you know, as well as I did. You know, I don't know if I still know it the way that I knew it before, but like the Skybox Draft Picks, I remember the 92-93 set was this weird looking like gold box on the card. I don't know why they did that. Like it's the Shaq set. And, I remember putting it together. I think I sold it. I think I probably tried to grade some of them and I probably sold like the rest of them. Or I don't know exactly, you know, what wound up happening. I remember at one point in time, I was able to do the entire draft class. I remember that 92 draft was awesome because I became a Latrell Sprewell fan. I thought he was great. I was hoping the Knicks would draft him at 20. And I'm pretty sure they took Hubert Davis at 20 instead of taking Latrell Sprewell, who I think went at 24. I'm not 100% sure, but I think he was out of Alabama. It wasn't a huge basketball school at the time. But I remember, you know, talking to somebody, this was maybe last year, he was at the National. And, you know, obviously people remember the top. People remember like Shaq, Mourning, Leitner, but they forget like Jim Jackson. And that was a cool set too, because Jim Jackson came out, I think it was Ohio State maybe, but he didn't play the first year. So like his card was actually released later and you could add it to the set. They had LaPhonso Ellis. He played at Notre Dame. I think he was the fifth pick. And people know him because he was in the Precious Metals, you know. Yeah, so he's got a cool card in there. Tom Gugliotta was the sixth pick. He played for Washington with the Bullets at the time. I met him on a family vacation. I forget if it was St. Thomas, St. Martin. He was, like, buying jewelry in a store. It was this huge, tall guy. And I was like, we know who he is because I had a Skybox draft card. And Walt Williams and Todd Day. Todd Day came out of Arkansas. He was on the Bucks. Clarence Weatherspoon, the Spoon Man, played for the Sixers. He was going to be the next, you know, Charles Barkley. Didn't pan out. But I had a bunch of Clarence Weatherspoon cards. And he had Adam Keefe and Robert Horry and, you know, Harold Miner, the Baby Jordan out of USC. And I remember these guys because I remember putting the set together. You know, I remember, you know, building that draft pick set. And I did it again for, you know, the year after, 93-94, that had, you know, your Weber and Sean Bradley and Anthony Hardaway, Penny. And there are sets out there like that that I know you're thinking of right now that you were building as a kid that you didn't get. You didn't have the money to buy the whole set. Well, they're at shows. They're on eBay. Go buy one of those, you know, go put one of those sets together. Figure out the one that works for you. That doesn't have to be PMG Reds, guys. I'm not telling you, go out there and spend a ton of money. As a matter of fact, one of the best things that I did at the East Coast National was I stood at somebody's binder for like an hour, yanking out Latrell Sprewell cards and Drew Bledsoe cards and cool 90s inserts. And I came home, I had spent like $68. And it was one of the most fun hours that I had ever had. I don't know if any of them are gradable, and I don't care, you know? And my last grading of Drew Bledsoe's, if that's any kind of an indication, I should never have graded any of them. But it just goes to show you, when I was buying cards in the 90s before there was grading, I wasn't exactly looking at how great a condition it was. It was just I wanted to have it. I, you know, just being able to find one at a card show and then go ahead and pick it up. But, yeah, I mean, listen, that's my 25-minute spiel. This was kind of all over the place. It's late. I'm tired. I got to get ready for work tomorrow, make sure the kids are in bed and make lunches and snacks. But everything in this one from, you know, what can be learned in a fantasy draft, how you can extrapolate that out into, you know, into the hobby. Maybe don't overpay for the young, shiny new star. I forgot to layer in that, you know, a couple years ago, his shiny star is a forgotten player. I mean, Derrick Henry, I remember giving Derrick Henry as a tip. He's going to rush for 2,000 yards. He's like a stud, you name it. Now, I remember, I think somebody picked him in the third round, and folks were like, what a reach, Derrick Henry. He's going to be 30. He's, you know, he's on the downhill. And, you know, part of the lesson, right? The other stuff, listen, let me know whether or not we should be doing news. Let me know whether or not the news should stop for a while. Let me know whether or not you think I should add in kind of like a 5-minute Cages card corner, you know, once a week, maybe doing on Fridays or something like that, where we, you know, we talk about what I'm doing with my cards, what I'm buying, what I'm selling, why I'm buying it, why I'm selling it. If you guys want to see that kind of card content as part of my card content, I'd love to hear from you guys, because whatever you guys tell me, I'll do. That's, I love reading the comments. Keep that up. And then, yeah, I mean, we talked about, you know, folks who are not thrilled with the state of the hobby. I'm trying to, you know, get everybody back into something that they loved and the reason why they were here. You know, and you wound up hearing, you know, the first 10 or 12 draft picks from the 92-93 draft that I only remember because of putting together the Sky Mox draft pick set. So I apologize for boring you guys with that one, but it's still up here in the brain. But anyway, guys, that's it. There's a fun one. That's episode 69. You know, do what you will. Can't believe I've done 69 of these episodes. We'll see you in a couple of days for episode 70. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.